It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
You go, boys and girls. That is Eisenwinter by Siegfried, and this is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker, right here on Moonsday morning. It's the 30th, right? Yeah, I just checked it out on my Frank Silva memorial clock. The 30th of December. Well, let's see, 30 days, that's September, April, June, and November. We got one more day, huh? One more day in this month and this year. So if you're going to do it, you better get it done if you're going to get it labeled for this year. Yeah, how about that? So we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show or donations for other projects we have in the mill. Yesterday was allegedly my day off. I didn't do a radio show, but I did a lot of photocopying of articles and so forth, and I put out about 10 or 15 packets to prisoners of mail and educational material. So that was one of the things that kept us busy yesterday. There was a lot of honeydew stuff going on around here, too. How about that? Don't forget to go to resist.com for a Harvard-type education, much better than Harvard, actually. You can download all those old radio shows and all kinds of stuff free. Yeah. There's a few things up there you could donate for, like T-shirts. We got these T-shirts, and I'm surprised these T-shirts haven't gone faster. I don't think I'm going to order any more T-shirts. No, not going to do that. They go too slow. We'll leave that to the right wingers to sell T-shirts and the stuff that they seem to have fun doing. Incidentally, I'm going to start out here with the critics, and I have one she-wolf here. That has been a supporter in the past who seems to have gotten into the mode of bouncing around to different internet website radio shows, and she gets confused. This is the same woman that was criticizing me because I didn't go down and recruit from the Tea Party. And that's not going to happen. Because you mention race at a tea party to where anybody overhears you, I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to kick you out. I don't know about these people who don't understand that the tea parties are controlled through the Koch brothers, these billionaires, perhaps one or two of the richest guys in the country, if not the richest. And they have this other organization. I should write it down, put it up here. Project America or something like that. Yeah, they're pulling the strings from behind, you know. And this critic was giving me hell because I didn't see it as profitable to go out and hang around with the teabaggers. Well, you can hang around them, but if you talk about race in any way at all, they're going to run you off. Just like in the John Birch Society used to be. We used to have to talk race after the meetings and stuff. Because, Robert Welch, the head of the Birch Society, if anybody starts talking race, get them out. Throw them out. Get rid of them. So, this is a common thing with right-wingers. You know, it's difficult for people to get out of the right wing. I mean, some people never will get out of the right wing. And, right-wing conservative and the racial end of the right-wing conservative, because they tend to listen to people that aren't really giving them information that's in their best interest. I'm going to play back this call I got from this lady, and because it has to do with my playing of some of the Mike Malloy stuff. Who on the race issue is no good at all, of course. But he does go after the Jews and Israel now and then. And the reason I've used some of his research is because he puts a lot of time in on digging up articles and stuff. And some of the stuff is valuable to us. And so this woman doesn't seem to understand that it's just a means to an end. You got to understand that. You got to have. There's a means to an end. There's something you want, and you know where to get it. You get it and leave. You're not sitting there worshiping or saying what a great guy the guy had put together for. You're looking for information. You're looking for ammunition. And I look for ammunition wherever I could find it. Now, some of these people on other radio shows, I don't, you know, monitor and keep an ear on them all the time. I don't have time to do it, but I know what they do. They start throwing barbs at old terrible Tommy because, he downloaded his horrible white-hating Mike Malloy stuff. Well, they just don't get it. And if you can't get out of the right wing, the funny thing about it is, now they will go over to the left when it comes to Jew criticism and things like that. Yeah, and they'll put that, they'll talk all about that. So, it's like the pot calling the pan black. But anyhow, I'll continue to go wherever I feel I need to go to get information. If that information is flawed, that's a problem. But a lot of this information is half-truth. And it's up to you, as an intelligent Aryan person, to read between the lines and figure it out. And not just say, oh my God, this guy's he's a race-mixing son of a bitch. Nothing he says can be correct. Well, that's foolish. And that's how Germany lost World War II. Their intelligence service was sucked, while the propaganda of the British and the even the Americans and so forth was powerful. It was powerful. And too much of the German propaganda was white propaganda, simply talking, supporting their own position, not understanding gray and black propaganda. But anyhow, that's in the past. Not that Goebbels did a good job of propagandizing the German people, but he didn't do that well propagandizing anybody else. However, he had the drawback of not speaking in English, and that gives a leg up to, of course, the British, you know, and people like that. Speak the same language we do, or we speak the same language they do, even though we butcher it, but we speak it. So it's very difficult to compete with an enemy that's speaking in a language you don't know, and it can be deciphered by our enemies and put back to you where you don't understand what the guy said in the first place. But anyhow, really, the sign of a right-winger, he hangs on to this conservative right-wing stuff, and he won't let go. And it disrupts his view of things, as far as I'm concerned. Now, Malloy is very anti-religion, so we agree on that. And he criticizes Judaism, too. And he's anti-war, and I am too. He's pro-environmentalist, I am too. So there's a lot of stuff he puts on the show, like other people put on their show, that I can extract and use, and I'm going to do it. But if you can't get out of the right wing and get your mind right to where we're going to use whatever weapon we can get from wherever we can get it, to win, and of course this caller is of course pro-Christian, and she's going on and on about how wonderful it was that we've got this the Duck family back on the tracks, and that was a great example of the white race coming to the fore and getting this show back on the air. Well, I don't see that as any kind of victory at all. These people, he's more of a Christian apologist than anything else. I don't see that I have any connection ideologically with this Mr. Howard. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's a hardcore racist, but I don't know. But I'm not going to waste my time saying what a great event this was when all these white Christians that'll never call radio stations about anything else are calling up and demanding they put the Duck Man back on. That, to me, that's not the war. That is not the war at all. And so if you don't understand that, I don't know what to tell you. So let me get her on here and let her speak what she's got to say, and then you can comment back to me if you want to. Either way, I've got thick skin, man. If I... hard to offend old terrible Tommy.
She lives in Florida. Hey, listen, I know you like to play Mike Malloy's broadcast on the podcast, but in my opinion, he is bad for our white psyche. The guy couldn't be more anti-white if he tried. Now, I know you say he has it right on the environmental issue and the economic issue, but so do a lot of people. Mike Malloy is a coward and a pussy. He wouldn't say jack squat about the little terrible secret that the Jews do when they circumcise little boys. I won't go into it. Anyone can look it up online. Or what the Muslims do to their women when they cheat on them and stone them to death. Mike Malloy only bashes white Christians because he's a coward. He knows that if he starts dissing the Jews, talking about the Talmud, talking about the Quran, or bashing any other sacred religion, he'd have his ass handed to him on a plate, and he wouldn't be, he'd be lucky if he could speak over the intercom at Walmart. And we all know this. If you want to really put on some good intel for people who want to know practical solutions instead of whining, as you and I both hate, play clips from Mark Warnicki's radio show, from Liberty Tree Radio, and from the Micro Effect. He's a white man. He called out the Jews. He talks about practical solutions, and he's a good guy. Lastly, for all those who bash Christians, 9 million Christians called and bitched and screamed to A&E over this Bill Robertson's Duck Dynasty comment, and the kikes back down. The family's back on the show. So the redneck $400 million Robertson family is back on the show. When's the last time 9 million of us had that kind of power to call and bitch and make the heaves back down? Think about that, Tommy. Signing off, 14-5.
Well, what am I going to say? I applaud her zeal and all that, but she obviously does not listen to Malloy very much. I have to tape a lot of these things, and there's no secret how he feels about race. Just a minute here. There's no secret that he's a race mixed son of a bitch, and he's got some Jew friends too. I'm talking about extracting information that's useful to me and you. And also, I noticed the lady didn't mention the fact that he's very anti-religion. He's anti all the Abrahamic religions. He routinely cusses Judaism and Islam religion and Christianity. He spends more time on Christianity, that's for sure. So, nine million people calling to bitch about the duck man being taken off TV. That's some kind of an Aryan victory. I don't see it. I don't think you taught the Jews a lesson at all, because they just change things around a little and go right on doing what they do 85-90% of the time on television. So it's one of those things. So I wish we could get people to continue to move totally out of this right-wing hang-up, this conservative hang-up. But I still get a lot of people that communicate with me that I can tell I got one foot in the old way and one foot in the new way. Now, another example would be where there's a legitimate bitch to Terrible Tommy. I commented on this latest flap where this young white guy cold-cocked an older 79-year-old black guy, and I didn't have much information on it, and I don't know where I got it, but I think I thought it was happened in a bar and so forth. So I more or less said, well, he probably had it coming, but I was told and given more information that the story was much different than I had it. So, and I agree with the person who took me to the woodshed. So I said, here I go to the woodshed again. So when I make an error, and if there's any argument with any of this stuff I've extracted from the progressives or Malloy, tell me exactly what's wrong with it and why you disagree with it. and or understand that maybe I'm only promoting part of it, you see. But I, doing a show every day, I don't have hours, and I don't have producer here. I don't have somebody sitting here at my beck and call to check on all this stuff. I just have to go for it by the seat of the pants as it comes along every day. So anyhow, that's my bitch for today, and for all those guys that are on these other radio shows that for some reason like to take pot shots at old terrible Tommy and twist around what I've said. Well, you can go kiss my white ass. How about that? Also, remember, I get the biggest criticisms I get is from people who don't donate anything to run the show or the website or anything else. And they don't, most of them don't donate to anybody. You know, these guys are starting up these radio shows around that have, at least partially on the race issue, are going to find that it's almost like pulling hen's teeth to get money out of people. And so, but I notice, like I say, the ones that scream the loudest at me are the ones who have never sent me a dime. Well, let's now jump over there to Europe with Calmiros. I don't know whether you've heard of Calmiros or not, but I think I agree with him quite a bit down the line as a type of Aryan socialist or whatever. So we're going to listen to him a little bit, courtesy of Might Is Right and Bill Rice. So here we go.
Some time ago, I was reading the excellent essay by Frederick Jackson Turner on the significance of the frontier in American history. And after reading it, I started thinking, well then, what is this frontier that has shaped the American civilization so deeply? And after a while, it occurred to me that the frontier is actually that virgin land where enormous natural resources are just waiting to be exploited to facilitate growth. And as millions and millions of people moved into this space to exploit the seemingly endless resources, growth eventually became exponential. So frontier is the space where exponential growth is possible. Therefore, the question is really about the significance of growth in American history. America, the frontier is about growth. Take the growth out of the equation and what is left. America is facing a crisis now because for the first time in American history, exponential growth is no longer possible. Borrowing money and getting deeper into debt was the last resort to expand the economic boundary, the frontier, and maintain growth. And now, finally, we are reaching a point when this is no longer possible. Growth still haunts the collective psyche of the Americans. This is in great deal due to the Protestant and especially Calvinist heritage. As Max Weber pointed out, Protestant sects were notorious for their emphasis on economic success as a sign of God's grace and the salvation of one's soul. Those whom God had chosen for eternal life could be recognized by their material advancement. Getting rich was almost perceived as the 11th commandment. And as the tired, poor, and huddled masses escaped the destitution and hunger of Europe to America, it is no wonder that satisfying the individual's material needs became the fundamental creed of the new burgeoning nation. I've often heard Finnish immigrants telling in interviews how USA is a great place because you can make it here, and undoubtedly they have fared far better in USA than they would have ever made it in Finland. However, I must strongly protest against this kind of thinking, because after you have emigrated to the United States, you should consider it as a home and not a place of business. The merits of your country should have nothing to do with your prospects for economic advancement. And another thing, some time ago I heard President Obama talking to distraught Americans about how to revive the economy and create new jobs, and I remember him using the expression middle-class jobs for middle-class Americans. Middle-class this, middle-class that. In America, everyone always seems to be middle-class. I find this overemphasis on middle class quite strange. It would seem that in America, admitting that you are actually working class means admitting a grave social failure in life. This is a problem, however, because if you acknowledge that you are actually working class, you recognize that your social and economic interests are in direct conflict with the capitalists, in this case, corporate America. The middle class cannot and will not see this. The middle class thinks it is already above the social struggle. The middle class is confident, always going places on its way up the social ladder. The middle class is always more than willing to sacrifice the working class without realizing that its fate is tied to the fate of the working class and that it will eventually join the working class in the bread queues. The middle class pretends to be tolerant. The middle class doesn't think in racial terms because it believes it doesn't have to. The most destructive social force in any developed industrial society is the ill-founded optimism of the selfish middle class. The middle class, feeling confident about their upward social mobility, identifies with the rich. Enterprising, business-oriented people tend to think like the rich, believing that they will be rich themselves one day. It is the American way, after all. But this is when you get screwed, because most of us will never get rich. Actually, it is getting increasingly difficult to maintain even the facade of respectable middle-class existence. The strength of the European societies is that we have working-class parties and we have working-class identities, and no matter what the radical Marxists have fantasized or theorized, the working classes in Europe have always been willing to fight and suffer defending their nations and national identity. I think what America needs now more than ever is a white working class movement, emphasis on both white and working class. The second American Revolution, or maybe the third since the second was actually crushed in 1865, will have to be both a race war and a class war. You absolutely need them both. A revolution without both of these aspects will only betray the revolutionaries in the end. White working class Americans, formerly known as the middle class, must begin to defend their rights both as a race and as a class. White working class Americans must learn to understand that you cannot effectively defend your social and economic interests without defending your ethnic, racial interests as well. White working class Americans must also learn that by solely concentrating on the racial issue, they make themselves stooges of corporate America. White Americans must stop chasing the shadow of the American dream and forsake the narrow middle-class perspective. White Americans must learn to focus on love for their soil and for their racial kinfolk, regardless of whether there are any opportunities for material advancement. The Poles and the Irish, for example, have had a particularly difficult history, and I doubt that there has ever been such a thing as a Polish or an Irish dream. Anything that can be compared to the American dream. The Irish and the Poles have most likely only dreamt that their people and culture would survive oppression, foreign occupation and poverty. But have these tragic circumstances made the Irish or the Poles any less proud of their nation? Far from it. The more difficult the times, the more stubborn the Irish and the Poles got, and their identity always survived. The French have been ruled by good kings and bad kings, by dictators and emperors. During its long history, France has been defeated, invaded, and torn apart. And yet, in the eyes of the ordinary French, be they farmers, workers, intellectuals, shopkeepers, or aristocrats, France is eternal. France existed in a primordial sense already when the painters of the Lascaux caves brushed the walls with red ochre for the first time, and it will exist long after us. Russian history is full of misery and suffering, and the lot of the Russian people, the peasantry, has often been excruciating. And still, no matter how badly the Russian people have been treated by their own state, Russia itself is a deeply spiritual experience for its people. Regardless of the circumstances, it is always clear that for the Russian people, Russia comes first. Without Russia, there is nothing. Now, white Americans must also learn to think in terms of blood and soil, grow roots and start behaving like an ancient race. White Americans must forget all that nonsense about being a nation of immigrants. as long as you buy that rubbish, you give your elite a carte blanche for ethnic engineering, which in the end, as you know, only aims at getting rid of you. For far too long, ethnicity has been perceived as the privilege of the minorities, and white people have been regarded as the bland wallpaper against which the minorities blossom. White people must now reclaim their ethnicity, but how can you reclaim an ethnicity if you don't even think in ethnic terms? The identity of a nation, in the deep, organic sense of the word, is always based on the physical bond between the people and their intimate relationship with the land. Political abstractions, in the end, are only secondary. France existed already long before anyone had even uttered the words liberté, égalité, fraternité, and undoubtedly will exist long after these words have fallen out of use or become corrupted beyond comprehension. And even as much as I appreciate the quintessentially American values such as freedom and democracy, I still have to say that I often find them more of a philosophical speculation when compared with the physical bonds of blood and soil. Concepts such as freedom and democracy may in time degenerate into empty clichés, which actually only work as a camouflage to hide the fact that people are no longer free and have no say about how their country is run. But the land and the people are real, always. The chief business of the American people is business. It's a dangerous maxim, for it implies that we are not talking about a nation in the deep organic sense of the word, but a trading post. The highest value should therefore always be given to the survival of your ethnic community, your racial kinfolk, and maintaining the stewardship of the land so that you can in time pass it on to the next generation of your own people. In other words, the rugged individualists must now finally come together and form a truly national community in the deep organic sense of the word. Let us call it the Volksgemeinschaft. Or otherwise, the white people of America cannot survive. One absolute requirement for the survival of the white people in America is that the American empire falls apart. It should break up into smaller regional units with a strong ethnic, social and moral cohesion and a political system which reflects the local needs and is truly accountable to the voters. In other words, nations in the deep organic sense of the word. For it is an iron law of history that empires eventually turn against the people who created them. All empires become corrupt as wealth and power begins to gravitate to an increasingly smaller circles of the elite. Arrogant and isolated, the elite treats the ordinary citizens of the empire as slaves and potential enemies. By exploiting the power of the empire, the elite becomes richer and richer. The elite is a prostitute. The members of the elite sell their political influence over the empire to the highest bidder, and eventually everything is for sale. As the power of the empire grows, the power of the elite grows with it, and eventually the imperial elite can wield global influence. As a result, the elite distances itself increasingly from its racial kinfolk and adopts a cosmopolitan identity. And when the empire reaches its zenith, this metamorphosis is also complete. The butterfly emerges out of the cocoon, and the new brilliant cosmopolitan elite, aided by foreign and domestic parasites, declares a merciless social war against its own people. Thus, every empire is fundamentally flawed, and its capital thoroughly corrupt. And you cannot fix this, for you can never fix a decaying empire. The empire can only fall when the time comes. You cannot fix the empire by sending good and honest men to the capital, because the simple logic of the system corrupts everyone along the way. This is not Mr. Smith goes to Washington, because you cannot function within the system unless you prostitute yourself as well. You cannot bring integrity and honesty to a system which in reality is actually a brothel. If a seat in the Congress costs a candidate tens of millions of dollars, how then could politics be anything other than extension of business? And as more and more power gravitates in the capital, the more vital it becomes for the corporate America to secure its interests by corrupting that seat of power. The more accommodating to the needs of the capitalist class government becomes, the more power will be vested into it. Thus, the vicious circle is ready. So therefore, it is clear, the empire and the system with it must go. It is absolutely vital that we can make the distinction between real nation, in the deep organic sense of the word, and the empire, because the empire and the nation can never be interchangeable. Empire can never create a nation, only a mockery, a caricature version of a nation. And all the pomp and pageantry and imposing buildings are there only to hide this fact. An enterprising and aggressive nation can create an empire, but once the empire is built, it turns against the nation that built it. Empires do not create nations. Empires corrupt, degenerate, and pervert nations. All empires end their days ethnically hollow. The worst enemy of any empire is its own citizens challenging the power of the imperial elite. Therefore, a dying empire and its fearful elite is always willing to resort to massive violence against the citizens of the empire in order to turn them into slaves. Americans have always fought to retain their personal freedom against government intrusion, but in doing so, become slaves of capitalism. In this case, corporate America. Ironically enough, as corporate America found government and the law enforcement system to be a useful tool to impose its will on the American people, their powers have been growing ever since. The government is weak only in relation to corporate America, but when it comes to ordinary white folks, the government has become absolutely totalitarian. When corporate America wanted total freedom for itself, it perceived government as an enemy and wanted it to be weak. The middle class supported this wholeheartedly. When corporate America wanted to enslave ordinary Americans, it realized that government was a useful tool in this, and therefore corporate America started to support big government. This the middle class didn't quite get. You often hear people say that no one wants big government to regulate the lives of ordinary Americans, but when this is done slyly and covertly and through intermediaries by corporate America, people don't seem to notice it or care. You often hear people say that if big government regulates business, code word for corporate America, this will eventually lead to a disaster. But when it turns out that it is actually corporate America that regulates big government, people fail to see the impending disaster. People demand freedom for the market, again a code word for corporate America, believing that their personal freedom depends on it as well. But when the power of the corporations is then unleashed, the rights of the individual citizen will have to take the back seat. Why then is the middle class in its quest for freedom so bitterly betrayed by corporate America? Firstly, middle class confuses the freedom of corporations with the personal freedom of the individual. Secondly, the middle class fails to understand that corporate America, in the end, doesn't even want the free markets, but the exact opposite. It seeks to control the market and the individual consumer. Any company operating in the open market welcomes the opportunities brought by the free and rational exchange of products, services, and capital. However, whatever company ultimately seeks is to eradicate competition in order to monopolize and control the market, and in this way to maximize the profit margin. Those who say they welcome the competition are simply lying. For the capitalist, too much is always at stake to be left solely to the whims of the market. Therefore, political leverage is needed to protect the invested capital. Eventually, all capitalists want to become feudal masters, to control the market and the consumers without restraint, in short, to abolish the free market. Feudalism is the highest form of capitalism, and it is the result of business and government merging completely. A telltale sign of this development is the end of social mobility. Corporate America and big government go hand in hand. You cannot have one without the other, because this is the very idea of the empire. As a result of all this, freedom has become an illusion, and as long as white Americans believe in that illusion, they get screwed. Too often, freedom means freedom to be poor, freedom to go hungry, freedom to be without a proper job, freedom to be without a decent home. But still, it would seem, to an outsider at least, that as long as Americans also have the freedom to dream, freedom to be optimistic, and freedom to be confident, they will settle for it. You cannot help thinking that sometimes the illusion of freedom is the cruelest slave driver. I know that as an outsider, I really shouldn't try to analyze America. But since the American civilization has such an immense influence on the modern world, I felt compelled to at least give it a try. And I have a feeling that white people in America should also pay some attention to these matters. Now, as growth is over and with its passing has closed the second period of American history.
Well, Carl Miro says, hit it on the head as usual. He's a Finnish citizen from Finland, and he does a great job. But I gotta say, I believe everything he said I've touched on over and over and over again. So it seems like we're pretty well in tune here on the problem. I want to thank Bill Rice and his Might is Right show for sending that to me. And this is one of the reasons for our problem, that people who tend once in a while to think about race are always drawn back into this middle class idea that they may be able to get rich like those other people have gotten rich, but then they slide right back down. So Muros is right. It's the empire has to deteriorate and collapse. Nothing of major importance is going to be done by our forces until that time. Now, we can prepare for it, we can propagandize for it, we can do all kinds of things for it with the understanding that it's not going to happen until it's going to happen, and it's primarily up to the system itself to eat its own tail. And so, and to go out in the street and just jump on some minority or some whoever, is a waste of time. Self-defense, that's another issue. If you're attacked collectively or individually, then you're going to have to fight back. And you should always be in top shape to fight back. So anyhow, thank you, Carl Miros. Correction, I believe that's Kai Miros, K-A-I. Incidentally, on the Craig Cobb issue, I wanted people to understand that however I was highly critical of the way it turned into, the direction it took, that does not mean that I'm against Craig Cobb. I just sent him a letter yesterday. There's people I've known who have made mistakes, and I've criticized them for it. But if that doesn't mean that I end any kind of friendly relationship with those people, as long as they don't screw up things too bad. Anyhow, I understand that VNN, I'm not sure about this, but I understand VNN and some of the other right-wingers that had contact with Craig Cobb have dropped communications with him. And if that's true, that's bad. Some of them, right-wing types, may have even thought that since they said his DNA was, 16% black, which is ridiculous, that might have been their reason. That is crazy. And if you could be dissuaded from supporting somebody on something as bizarre as that, you know, you're not running very true to course as far as I'm concerned. Well, boys and girls, get ready for it. Get ready for niggerboarding. You're going to be double time niggerboarded the next month or so, you know, January niggerboarding time, and Martin Luther King. You know what's really strange about this? Not really strange. If Martin Luther King had not been assassinated, he'd have been almost forgotten by now, for the most part. He'd have been just a hyphen in the historical record. But being assassinated catapulted into this international position, along with Kennedy. If Kennedy hadn't been assassinated, he'd have been pretty much long forgotten by now, because he had plenty of enemies at the time. At least half the country were opposed to Kennedy. They try to make it look like now that everybody was for Kennedy. Well, that's ridiculous. But Martin Luther King, well, his memory is going to go on and go on for a long time, because being assassinated. Now, it's interesting that they didn't do that. And then Lincoln, they did it with Lincoln, too. But Harding and McKinley, I believe, were both assassinated. I guess it didn't play into the Jews' hands to support those people in history. It was announced on the radio this morning that there's a whole bunch more black movies coming out. Yeah, I guess the Jews have finally decided to hit the market with really black stories, black this, black that, and even pushing it more on us. And, of course, they keep pushing the white women with the black guys. Boy, I'll tell you, it's getting something else on TV or in the movies. So get ready, buckle your seatbelt, and get ready to be niggerboarded big time. What short memories do we have, or the public has? Remember the Iraq War? Well, if you'll read the books, and I've got some of them about Iraq before the war, well, it was pretty peaceful, as long as you didn't cross Saddam Hussein. Yeah, they had religious tolerance there. The women had more rights than almost any of the other countries over there. It was a very highly educated country and everything else. Now, I see the Christians are whining and whining how they're getting hammered by these Islamic sects in Iraq and other places. Well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Christians weren't being persecuted under Saddam Hussein, or at least not in any degree, you know. And they're all happy about Muammar Gaddafi. Oh, boy, we took him out. I heard a guy on the radio this morning, TV, said, we took him out. Well, you know, we had no business even being involved in their internal business in the country. And Gaddafi was not that hard to get along with. He's not our poster child, of course. He wasn't white. But now the Christians are being slaughtered all over the place. I have no record of the Christians being persecuted hardly at all in his country prior to that. So, you Christians, you better be careful what you pray for, because they're going to come back and bite you in the ass. And now you want us to go to war with everybody because some of the people that say they're Christians are getting brutalized? I don't think so. And the ironic thing of it all, many of these people who are getting picked up by foreign governments in the Middle East and China and other places, they're Christian fanatics is what they are. They come here and they get a citizenship. And then they go right back out to the older the countries they'd been at before and start undermining those countries through the preaching of religion, and the country gets upset about it and throws them in prison. And then what do we do? Oh, American is arrested. There's an American arrested by the North Koreans, you know. Well, by the empire's label, he's an American, but he's not an American as far as I'm concerned, as far as race is concerned. But anyhow, everybody says, oh my God, an American citizen got clobbered over in this foreign country. I say, the hell with them. Let them clobber them. There's one thing I despise as much as the Jews, at least the Jew activists, it's these Christian zealots. And I make no bones about it. I am totally anti-Christian, even though I'll talk to Christians, and sometimes I like some of the Christians, but there's always a hook in everything they come at you with. They're always wanting to get you on board. That's why these Bible schools at all these churches, they get the kids down there and entertain them and get them into playing games. And I know when I was a kid, go on hay rides and go on ice skating trips and roller skating to suck them in. It's just like it's a cult. I don't care whether it's a big cult like the Catholics or the Baptists or the Methodists or what, or whether it's a little cult like Jim Jones. It's all cult. All these big-time preachers and on television and everything, they got thousands of sheep suckers. They should all be in a slammer as far as I'm concerned.
musical, plus romantic comedies like Baggage Claim and Peoples, and more straight-up comedies from Kevin Hart and Tyler Perry, who teams up this time with Larry the Cable Guy.
Did you hear the one about the two rabbis and black men? Did you hear the one about the straight bullet that killed the redneck for telling the story about the two rabbis and the black men?
It's a cyclical thing. Filmmaker Reginald Hudlin helped produce Django Unchained. He also wrote and directed the 1990 hit...
The House Party! What? The House Party!
We saw in the 1970s an explosion of black filmmakers, and not so much.
And there were earlier explosions of black filmmakers in the 80s and the 90s. In 1992, Hudlin directed the big-budget Eddie Murphy comedy Boomerang. It came out in the same year as director Ernest Dickerson's Juice with Tupac Shakur and Spike Lee's biopic Malcolm X, starring Denzel Washington in an Oscar-nominated role.
And we thought, okay, here we are. We're switching gears. We're going to the next level. But the fact is, that was the end of an era.
An era that can be kept alive with a more solid infrastructure of support in Hollywood, according to Wesley Morris. He's a film critic for Grantland, which means...
I've seen all those films.
All 11 this year, and only one of them, Universal Pictures' The Best Man Holiday, was produced by a major Hollywood studio.
And they can't all just be independent movies. They can't all just be movies about slaves, and they can't all star the same three actors. And I think this year you've got a real sense that that is definitely something that is not only possible, but it's viable as well.
Me being African-American, it's really important to validate my experience and see some of my experiences portrayed on screen.
What moviegoer Khalilah Liverpool doesn't see enough of on screen is black women in leading roles. Of the top 11 films starring black actors by black directors, only three were carried by a lead female role. And of the three, one was played by a man, Tyler Perry, as the outspoken grandmother of a Madea Christmas. Hansi Le Wong, NPR News.
Well, there's a little clip I recorded on my little portable recorder. I carry one with me all the time, and that's why once in a while you'll get something, a clip from me, but it would be partial because I don't get it right as it first starts. But anyhow, the Jews are cranking it up again. They think they've got enough of a black audience, and they've converted enough whites into being wiggers that they're going to go to all these black movies. And, of course, they're going to have their few white people in the movie just to... say they're fair and balanced, right? Like I've said before, the brilliant move of the Jews in Hollywood was to put blacks in, make them leading men, and put them in roles of respectability as professionals and presidents and scientists, generals and all that. And if you play that enough, the white sheep out there begin to buy it and believe it. And especially since it... allows them to work out their feelings of guilt for their horrible treatment of niggers. It's so simple if you know what you're looking for. But now it's getting blatant. It's not even, you know, it's blatant now. Well, the Jew had a very simple program. He said, I'll help you out with this civil wrongs thing where we can rob the white working class. We're not going to really put much money into it ourselves, even though we'll put some money to and get triple that back, but we're going to support your anti-white civil wrongs bill here, and as long as you stay in line with us and keep robbing the white working class, I'm not going to use the white middle class anymore, the white working class. You're all right, you're a good nigger. But don't cross us, though. And sometimes they cross them. How about this out of a black newspaper? Black entertainer Kanye West has now joined the elite ranks of some of our most powerful and prestigious black freedom fighters, such as Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Bishop Desmond Tutu, and the Honorable Mr. Minister Louis Farrakhan, and even our late great freedom fighter Nelson Mandela, for they, like Kanye, were all labeled anti-Semites by the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Not that they are or ever were anti-Semitic, but all have advocated setting blacks on an economic course for their survival and advancement. And, of course, this is because they're wanting to get into the big money. Now that they raped and robbed the working class whites, they're turning their attention to the rich. And so, says here, a route to true power that is exactly opposite of the dead-end path Jewish financiers of Negro leadership have demanded that we go down. And this deeply troubles Jewish watchdogs like Abraham Foxman and all the other liberal Jewish groups. Kanye West took great umbrage at the ADL insult at his recent Chicago concert, was defiant, telling the crowd that he spoke with Minister Farrakhan and he wasn't apologizing for anything, saying to the contrary that he would be standing up to his accusers even stronger. Well, you see, now they're gonna go keep going after him. Anytime a black stands up like Malcolm X and says it the way black people should say it, really, this is what happens. And in that turn up vein, we will clearly show the political power wielded by Jews as a result. The consequence, the product of their immense economic base and superstructure. Not the other way around. Brother Kanye's recent powerful statements about his frustrating foray into the clothing and apparel business show the workings of a man who has chosen to be more than an entertainer. He is wisely seeking to use the wealth he has generated to build a truly lasting economic foundation. As The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2 shows, Jewish dominance in the field of business, trade, commerce, and finance started with black labor. Excuse me. Well, don't forget white labor. White slave labor. From the southern cotton field investments of the Rothschilds to the Alabama slave dealings of the Lehman Brothers to the Jewish needle trade sweatshops of New York. Conway West's attempt to penetrate that history and those business connections is a formidable venture and worthy of full black support. It is also why Abraham Foxman and the Jews have targeted him so directly. They're protecting their market, not exposing anti-Semites. Make no mistake about it. Well, in fact, the term anti-Semite is used as a weapon, and in most cases it doesn't even apply. In his latest ploy, Foxman says he decries West's comment in a radio interview on November 26 when explaining the massive resistance to President Barack Obama. The hip-hop star said, "Black people don't have the same level of connections as Jewish people," unquote. Well, that's true. Foxman feigned outrage. There it goes again, the age-old canard that Jews are all powerful and control the levels of power in our government. Well, doesn't Netanyahu say that? Didn't Sharon say that? Didn't, what was the one out of the book out of Hollywood? Something of their own that they Jews bragging about how they control Hollywood. These guys like Foxman are funny. By all standards and honesty and truth, West's comment could not have been more benign. Indeed, Brother Kanye's comment is so understated that it might almost be considered naive. Let us look carefully at this contentious issue of Jewish power, but not through black eyes or West's eyes or even Minister Farrakhan's eyes. Let us look solely and exclusively through Jewish eyes. Foxman's own organization, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, once had a president named Simon Wolf, who in 1926 wrote with evident pride, "We all know that the first bankers of the world, Rothschilds, are Jews, We know they control not only money market, but also the political destiny of the European world. Mercantile enterprises owe a vast debt to the Jew. You need but look at the streets of principal cities of the world on Jewish holidays, and you will at once see that trade is in mourning. The busy hum is hushed. Everything is languid, unquote. In fact, according to the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia of 1948, in Eastern Europe, there were very recent countries in which 90% or more of the trades was in Jewish hands. In some branches of trade and export, they controlled entirely 100%. Now, that has to be anti-Semitism. West did not come anywhere near such statements. Let's go back a time when black people felt the Jewish influence most acutely. The leading Jewish historian and rabbi Mark Lee Raphael wrote that the Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. 9 out of 10 Africans were shipped to Brazil, where Jewish connections were so influential that on Jewish holidays, the slave auctions had to be postponed because all the buyers and sellers of African men, women, children were at the synagogues praying. Indeed, Simon Wiesenthal Center scholar Dr. Harold Brackman has pointed out that slave trading in Brazil became a Jewish mercantile specialty in much the same way it had been in early medieval Europe, and that was mostly white people. In America, the average slaveholder held about 7 slaves, but the Nation of Islam has documented dozens of Jewish slave dealers advertising the sale of as many as 200 slaves on a single day. Hundreds of these advertisements are collected in the recently released Nation of Islam book, Jews Selling Blacks, Slave Sale Advertising by American Jews. And according to Dr. Brackman, Jews were about twice as likely to be slave owners as the average white Southerner. In Hollywood, the entertainment capital of the world, Los Angeles Times columnist Joel Stein once wrote, "Jews totally run Hollywood." Yeah, the book, name of that book was Empire of Their Own. You should read it. In this opinion, he joins Jewish movie director Rob Reiner, who wrote of the movie industry, "It's all run by Jews," unquote. Scholar Charles Silberman, the motion picture industry was largely a Jewish invention, and though they are less than 2% of the population, Jews are an astounding 60% of the movie and TV elite. But it is in politics where the Jewish power is most felt and most feared. Two academicians, not rappers, Professor Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer, produced a groundbreaking work entitled Israel Lobby and the Foreign Policy, U.S. Foreign Policy, which opens many eyes to the powerful influence of the Jews. They argue that Jewish lobby groups like the American Israel Public Affairs Committee have significant leverage over the executive branch, unquote. That is to say, the White House and the president. Jewish power in media, they say, gives Jews the unique ability to make sure the lobby's perspective on Israel is widely reflected in the mainstream media. Scholars Walt and Mearsheimer maintain that AIPAC, in particular, has a stranglehold on the U.S. Congress because of its ability to reward legislators and congressional candidates who support its agenda and to punish those who challenge it, unquote. Reinforcing this statement is the plain fact that Jews are only 1.7% of the American population, but 5.4% of Congress, 12 Jews in the Senate, 22 in the House of Representatives. On the contrary, blacks, who are 12% of the population, have one senator who reached there on a technicality, the other in a special election. Well, don't forget the head of the Federal Reserve System is a Jew. And you can go right down a line in the big banks and pick them out. If you're counting, that's two of the three branches of government with inordinate Jewish representation. And in the third branch, the judicial and the 9 Supreme Court justices, 3 of them are Jewish. That's power. Let us look at how others have framed this Jewish political reality. Jewish political commentator Bill Maher stated flatly on his television show, quote, based on every statement I've heard from every Republican in the last 2 years, the Israelis are controlling our government, unquote. And when he said that, the studio audience gave him a huge applause. Kanye West did not go that far, but the ADL issued no press release or charges against Bill Maher. Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, who is now the Secretary of Defense, wrote that, quote, the Jewish lobby intimidates a lot of people up here in the Senate. I'm a United States senator. I'm not an Israeli senator. Anyhow, it's quite. I'm not going to read the whole article to you, but that's not coming from the Nazi Party. That's not even coming. I didn't even write it myself. That's coming from the black newspaper, Final Call. And my position is very simple on this, and I've made it clear. If the blacks in this country want to go after the Jews and the ruling class, I won't stand in their way, even if I could. I'm strictly out to work for the white working class. And the ruling class whites in this country and their political parties and all that deserve whatever they get. And these Jews that are in the background manipulating them. So, Mr. Negro, if you want to go after those people, be my guest. I won't lift a finger to stop them. I wonder sometimes whether these people are out there, Jews and government agents and so forth, that are they listening to this? They better be listening to this, because that's the future. It's going to happen. That's why you need a standing army in this country. That's why you need 7,000 military bases in the United States to protect the empire. But I don't think most of those troops are going to end up protecting the empire. When they see the empire is collapsing, I think there are going to be a lot of professional military men change sides, both black and white. So anyhow, that's it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Tears Day. And in the meantime, if they come to your door, don't let them in unless they've got a warrant and they can crash their way in if you don't open the door. If they want you to get in their car and go downtown and just talk it over, tune in 48 hours and you'll see why you don't go into a police station voluntarily. And you never talk. I've watched, mostly it's blacks that they're caught for some crime. But there's whites, too. But anyhow, they interrogate, and these cops think they're so smart because they can get these young guys, these black guys, to talk. And I don't know who's running their gangs, but all they have to do is tell them, don't talk. Even for a black guy, I'm saying, shut your mouth, man. Shut your mouth. You're talking yourself right into the damn clink. So anyhow, just remember, if they do get you down there and try to interrogate you, don't talk no matter what. Don't talk. Yeah. I'm sort of concerned about what Craig Cobb might have talked to the police about up there. I don't know whether he had that program down very, very strongly like I advocate. But if he talk too much to that sheriff up there and their investigators, and if he's talking now, it's going to be much harder to get him off.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Bye-bye.
14-5.
production manager. The show's over.